Nantucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Hour number two is now underway. April Marie Fogle coming up in about a half hour. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Also, at 11 o'clock hour, State Senator Chris Elliott. 251-343-0106. Who's booking their trip to Chicago today? No, not to see the Cubs or the White Sox or whatever else is going on in Chicago, why you would go to Chicago for anything else, I don't know. Except the Obama Library opens today. I've listened to the news here at the top of the hour. I've been to a bunch of these libraries. I've been to the Clintons in Little Rock, the Nixon, the Reagan. Well, I guess that's not a bunch. Carter. It's at some point we'll make it to the Obama Library. They're museums and they have exhibits and I don't know. The Nixon one was interesting, and this was before they put out a lot of what we didn't know who Deep Throat was, and we didn't know, so this had to be 20 years ago or so when I went to Nixon. Reagan's on top of a mountain. Seems like it could be at any moment be enveloped by a wildfire. My father lived in Simi Valley, so got to see that. And the Clinton Library just happened to be in Little Rock for, I was covering, it was back, I was the editor of the newspaper at South Alabama. And University of Arkansas Little Rock was, now it's just Little Rock. South was playing a basketball game, I think, on the road there, and that's what brought me to Little Rock. Haven't been back but one time since, but did go to the Clinton Library on that visit. So Obama has his now. What do you think the Trump Presidential Library will be like? I assume it's going to be, they wouldn't put it in New York City, would they? 251-343-0106. Knicks parade, Iran peace deal. And still a little bit of fallout from the elections Tuesday night. Kind of on the radar. We'll probably talk about that with Ms. Fogle here in just a bit. Named texture sends me a AI-generated image. The entire Iran war still costs less than the Minnesota fraud. Leo, how does this impact the midterms? The Democrat want a nuclear-armed Iran. It's only fair because we are idiocracy. I mean, but like, how do you know that you've achieved what is the definition of a nuclear-free Iran? Like, no drawings, no plans, no blueprints for a nuclear weapon. Uranium, I mean, you hear radioactive dust. I'm just as guilty here, but an understanding deficit. And Leo, what I can't get to, they could come to a conclusion, a reasonable conclusion, is what does objective achieved, what does mission accomplished look like? That's a very difficult thing to try to ascertain. There's just a bunch of different philosophies about that, a bunch of different definitions of that. So my hope is that we get a clearer vision of it. over the next in a few weeks. Because Trump is going to tell you that the mission was accomplished. Trump's going to tell you whatever he thinks that you need to hear. But he's going to have detractors in the Congress and on TV that aren't Democrats, that are within his own party. It's interesting that Bradley Jay thinks it's all about presidential politics in 28. And J.D. Vance drops a book, his memoir, and everybody's like, well, he's setting up to be president. But here in the last couple of days, he's taken a more of a prominent role in this peace agreement. And the word on the street about Vance was he never was a big proponent of any of this. And he's the veteran. He was the guy who kind of, got it with the interventionism and the military industrial complex. Like, he was the populist, the face of populism. Not with just like domestic economic policy, but with foreign policy. And now he's got this outsized role. It makes me wonder, is he more in the fold here, more involved? And that's why Trump's kind of putting him out there more. Named Texas Trump is a weak link, so you didn't expect him to surrender. Things are going to backfire on you people. Your big ugly bill, your turning point, racist white supremacy, etc. It's not going to work out for you. I'm just glad we have angry listeners, Democrat listeners on this program. Who weigh in a very constructive way. Big ugly bill. I told that right-wing talk show host about his big ugly bill. My daddy said I'd never amount to anything, but I texted to the Jeff Poor show, and I tell it like it is. That's how I picture you in my head, by the way. Named Texter writes, Jeff, when they shut down the dog racing in Mobile, Macon County, and Birmingham, The tracks went to nothing. I think Green Track in Utah stopped having live dog racing in the late 90s. I'm planning on going to the 28 to the Mobile track to bet the last race at Aqueduct Course Track. Come over to Mississippi. We got the lottery. Well, I mean, how hard is that? Go to Florida or Mississippi. But anyway, you're not going to get just the lottery, guys. That's pie in the sky stuff. That's a simplistic misunderstanding of how this all works. The lottery is the vehicle to bigger gaming, bigger gambling. That's the vehicle. They want to tell you this. Well, we polled it, Jeff, and people overwhelmingly want gambling. Well, they know they overwhelmingly want a lottery. But you're not going to get the lottery without a quote-unquote comprehensive gambling solution. Once you do away with the constitutional prohibition on games of chance, it's at the discretion of the legislature, the governor. Really, more so the legislature, because there's not really a veto power that isn't easily overridden. And that's where things change. The one thing just holding everything back right now, the one thing that's keeping this from getting spiraling in an out of control way is the prohibition in the state constitution. It's like a lawmaker told me. You think about it, a bunch of money grubbing politicians in Montgomery who think of the beaches as just, it might as well be South America. And how the gambling interest in this state would love a casino in Orange Beach or Gulf Shores. And once you take out that prohibition, they could put all the language into whatever enabling language or whatever enabling legislation they put forward. saying we're not going to do it down here. That could be taken out. They've screwed South Alabama over on the BP oil spill. Why would they screw South Alabama over on gambling? Tell me that. Like, I want you guys to really think about this. There's a lot of gambling actors that want it to be legal in this state that don't operate in good faith. A lot of proponents. They are not, like I said, they are not the best actors. They are perpetually looking for workarounds, loopholes. And they'll tell you, we'll never have it down here in Baldwin County. But they have used resources intended for the benefit of Baldwin County and other places. How about the gas tax? Do you think that this part of the state gets its return on investment there? Well, maybe with the port and the investment put there. But I'm just telling you that they will look at it. The dollar signs will start flashing in the eyes. They'll start hearing cash register bells or slot machine bells or whatever. And it's going to be tempting. And you're just crazy if you believe otherwise. You're not going to get just a lottery out of any kind of gambling. You're going to get everything. LJ, what is historic horse racing for those of us who don't go there? Well, my understanding is it's nothing really that your eyes can see. You don't notice it. You're just going into the one-armed bandits, and they're there, and they look like any other casino would. But the way they're programmed based on horse races that have already happened. So it's like a loophole. It's paramutual wagering based on something that's already happened. And that's the way they program these machines based on that. Sounds skeezy, doesn't it, LJ? John, you predicted we will have gambling in Alabama when? I think next year you'll get legislation moving. And I think you'll get it on the ballot. I don't know when they will put it on the ballot. They won't make the same mistake that Don Siegelman made. Siegelman's mistake, and he'll tell you this, was doing a special election. They thought if they got it by itself on a special election ballot, no one would show up except for the people that really wanted it. People would just kind of just ignore it. We have voter turnout problems. No one's going to come out and vote for this. Our people will show up to vote and we'll get it. And where they made the miscalculation was how Mississippi gambling interest worked in concert with the anti-gamblers in this state. There's a few pages in Abramoff's book about this where the religious right took money from gambling in Mississippi to fight gambling in Alabama. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend, I guess, or something like that. Strange bedfellows. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. April Marie Fogle coming up in the next segment. Then in the 11 o'clock hour, State Senator Chris Elliott. Rolling through these texts here. Killer B saying Trump is better than Bush or Kamala isn't good enough. All he did was incentivize more terrorists in our children's future. Who, Trump? I don't think so. And I'll say this. I don't know about, you know, domestic terrorism and this, like, religious adherence to, or just this cult-like adherence to, you know, what Islam says and the way people treat it. I don't know that necessarily attacking Iran really changes that orthodoxy. What I do will say here on this is the terrorism, I think terrorist entities are harmed by this. Iran suddenly got to worry about its own domestic politics. They can't participate in this adventurism with Hezbollah and Hamas quite to the extent that they were. Maybe they'll find a way, but it's going to be harder for them. So I disagree with that to some degree. You may have made them more angry, but their ability, their financial ability at least, to engage in this is hampered. And the texture of politics, Iran is ultimate reality that the maximalist demands of the Israel lobby and the Trump administration belief that it was attainable was an unforced error. It was a revisionist tip by neocons to reassert their authority in the Republican Party. American geopolitical power is not as omnipotent as the jingoes want us to believe. The PNAC agenda has been dead since 08. The Ted Cruz types are not the future. They're still there. They're still in power, and they still kind of wear a Tea Party hat. And maybe it's a throwback to Bushism. The deal with the neocons that they don't run as neocons anymore. You can't put somebody who is unabashedly a neoconservative can't win very many Republican primaries in this country. So the point there being, I think as a political, because at one time it was very politically popular. It was like 9/11 had just happened, and we got to start looking at this different. And that's where the neoconservatives saw their rise. You don't have this post 9/11 mentality in this country anymore in the Republican Party. So that is a political force. I don't think exist anymore, and I think you're right to this. They did try to reassert themselves, but they're not doing it in a very overt way. They're telling you that they're a Trump conservative. They don't like illegal immigration. I mean, they're checking all these other boxes, but this box over here that really means the most to them, they're not really talking about it. And we talked about this during this election cycle, and I asked a question, and I think Trump's doing the right thing. And some of this is this. Maybe they're not necessarily wedded to a philosophy that is, they're not wedded to the interventionist philosophy. They're just wedded to whatever Trump wants. You don't run against Trump. I'm sorry. I mean, I know it's like, We think for ourselves, but you get on his bad side. It's not just that you get on the bad side of his supporters. You get on the bad side of him, and he'll freeze you out. He'll tell the big money not to get behind your campaign. It's personal and maybe even petty, but that's just a reality you've got to operate within if you want to win an election. It's more about winning the election than it is, as I always say, the debate trophy. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Sitting here at the Floribama, about to open up a big old can. Good time, unwind, falling out of love in the same manner. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera. It's getting crazy, I'm getting hammered, sitting right here at the Floribama.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on the Thursday morning, 2513.
Thursday. It's overcast here. This is what a gross week. How's the weather
it's,
there?
It's monsoon.
Oh, yuck.
I guess whenever I built this kind of studio addition here, we have a metal roof, and it just sounds like a cascading waterfall above me right now. I mean, it is just coming down.
Oh, nice. I guess not so great for the sound. Your listeners maybe get to hear
it. I don't know if they can hear it or not. I got a pretty well-treated room. You may hear it a little bit in the background, but it is like a rolling thunder sort of in the background.
All right. Well, you guys stay safe there.
Well, we'll talk about what happened Tuesday night. I mean, I'm sure your answer is going to be the same as everyone else's, but it kind of went as we all expected.
It really did. And I would say the biggest surprise of the night to me was that John Wall got more votes than anyone else in the state. I suspected he would win his race, but I didn't suspect he would do better than either of the Senate candidates.
Well, I mean, I guess there just wasn't as much maybe money spent by the opponent, and that's why I did it. And also, like, you got to give it to Jared Hudson. Like, really, he dominated Birmingham. No, and there's just no other way to describe it. And I was thinking about this, and, you know, we did the story about the polls. I've always thought this about polls in Alabama, that they oversample Birmingham. And you oversample Birmingham, you get a +7 for Jared Hudson. And that turned out not to be, not even to be close.
Yeah, I was watching the results come in, kind of as they came in. And the thing that struck me more than how well Jared did in Central Alabama was also how terrible the turnout was. Like, I mean,
but it's always bad.
Embarrassing.
It's always bad in a runoff primary midterm. It's never, you know, and people got election fatigue. We've been in this perpetual election cycle for it just seemed like there's always one on the horizon that we're talking about. I think it turned out probably was, while still you're right, it was terrible and bad. It wasn't necessarily surprising.
Yeah, it was, and I really thought this cycle, now, and we've seen some negative cycles. I mean, that U.S. Senate race that Katie won, that was a freaking bloodbath in terms of third party spending coming out and destroying anybody running against Katie. But this one, it seems like a lot of them were negative. I wasn't expecting the Senate to get as bad as it did, but there was a lot of negativity this cycle.
Yeah, and the way, but the negativity seems to happen when there's sort of a long shot for the an opponent that they're not totally out of it, but they are it's still in the mix here. They are still potentially capable of winning the race, so they start throwing Hail Marys.
I would like for all it to be just, you know, I don't know if we need an executive order. I don't know what we need act from the legislature, but I would like jumping the shark to now be referred to as something with the raccoon, because I feel like that was the most desperate ploy we saw. The veterans, the definition of a veteran was pretty iffy, but the raccoon thing, that was just it. That was like, put a fork in me. I cannot hear one more word about any of these candidates once that came out.
Right. And it just, like you said, it reeked to desperation. But I've been hard on the Wes Allen campaign. And let me try to, like, I'll explain to you what's going on here. Donald Trump doesn't endorse John Wall. Wes Allen is lieutenant governor-elect today. So
absolutely.
Why didn't they do more to try to lock down that Trump endorsement? Or why didn't they try to do more to at least keep Trump out of that race? Why didn't they go down there, kiss the ring, do what? Do you want to be a lieutenant governor? Or do you want to die on this anti-never-Trumper hill? And that's what their campaign chose to do. Angie Horn, their consultant, she is a outspoken never-Trumper. And she allowed her personal biases to lose this election for Wes Allen.
Well, and I think that they never had a clear, you know, a clear message to start with in terms of the campaign. They somewhat, you would hear what he did, you know, in as a member of the state legislature or as probate, a little bit of secretary of state. But overall, it was a start to finish negative campaign.
Let me say this though. I mean, what do you run on for lieutenant governor? I've got to learn the Robert's Rules of Order the best. I mean, I get that. That's a hard race to like just talk policy and not, you know, dabble in the dark arts of negative campaigning or whatever. It just is what it is. But there are things they could have done. And here's what kills me.
So Will Ainsworth really set the bar, in my opinion, of what a lieutenant governor can and should do. Like, I can name off, and I'm sure you can too, things that Will Ainsworth, that he weighed in on, that he had a voice on. You know, he was able to use that bully pulpit to do a lot. Specifically for veterans comes to mind when it came to workforce opportunities for veterans. He weighed in on gender stuff. He did op-eds to 1819 on, you know, Magic City Acceptance Academy. There is opportunity to do more than cut ribbons and, you know, sit over the Senate. And I feel like that's what Wall was trying to do. I have no idea what Wes Allen was trying to do. None.
Yeah.
It was a bizarro campaign.
Well, he ran forever and he had a 35-point ceiling when the whole field was intact. So I don't know. I don't know the answer. You know, he never could break out of that ceiling. And you're running. Yeah. He was running since February of 2025. He had the longest run.
He also didn't have a lot of media presence or presence in, you know, I watched the Republican groups around Central Alabama, and he didn't have the presence that some of the other candidates had, where you were like, oh, they're back in town again. Oh, they just stopped at my favorite this, or oh, they just did that. He just didn't have that energy. It was it was an example of what not to do, I suppose, how to blow what should have been easy campaign.
Yeah. So, and I, you know, I kind of troubleshooting it. You bring up Will Ainsworth. And let me tell you this, though. The difference between Ainsworth and either John Wall or Wes Allen is Ainsworth plays the game. And the way it's a club. I mean, that's how these legislative bodies typically are. But Ainsworth was just more of a fit as a senator. I mean, he was a non-voting senator, essentially. They hung out together. They, you know, the staffs worked together. They did a lot of things together. I don't know. I think there was this fear that if you have either one of these two, that they're not going to quite be that fit. And you go back before right. Ainsworth, it was Kay Ivey. Well, it was vacant when she was governor for a couple of years when Bentley left. But then before that, when she was lieutenant governor, it was just like she is now as governor. You just never saw her around as much. Come in, gavel in, somebody else would just take the chair. And I don't, you know, my historical knowledge before that, it would have been when you kind of had this weird arrangement of, you know, you had little Jim Folsom, who was a Democrat. He probably fit in with the Democrat control. And you had Steve Windham, who didn't, but they whittled away the powers of that office. But that being said, I think for you to be the next Will Ainsworth, I mean, you got to go on a charm offensive with these individual senators. And I don't think these senators are quite there with what would have been there with either Wall or Allen.
You know, I'm so glad you pointed that out, because one of the things I really think is that, you know, if you are a John Wall right now, you're coming into this Montgomery world having run as an outsider. His election night speech, and I watched it, you know, from the introduction by Andrew Sorrell to his remarks himself, was he wasn't Montgomery establishment. I would never say an anti-establishment person needs to endear themselves with an establishment, especially watching what Trump did term one. But I think what John Wall needs to do some of that. I think John Wall needs to make allies bigger than his small tight circle right now in order to be effective. And so if I were to give John Wall advice, and I don't know that he's looking for any advice, that's what I would say. I would say find your Jess Skaggs, find who's going to know everybody and on principle, but help you get the job done that you want to accomplish.
Well, I just don't think there are Jess Skaggs. They're just not. I mean, you just don't go to the Jess Skaggs type store to find that guy.
Jess is going to be so confused. Someone sends a stem later. No, I think that you have to. He came in with Ainsworth, and he just had made those relationships. Who, there has to be someone in Montgomery now who understands the actual principles of that Wall ran on, but has those relationships, and that's what he needs to be looking for.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know how much he's thought about it, or spent time, you know, but that's going to be like the biggest part of this. He's going to be tested. John Wall in the state Senate chamber is going to be tested by Bobby Singleton, maybe by some of the other senators. He's going to have to like figure out how to deal with that in the most appropriate way. But I think that's coming.
Well, and here's the thing is there, look at who is on Ainsworth's staff now. I mean, he's maybe there is a former lawmaker out there. Maybe there is a somebody. I think he needs to have that. And then I think he goes into that office and makes the case of why they don't take all the power away from him, because we've seen them do it. We know that they will, that the legislature can be vindictive. We know what they're already anticipating, a big push to the right from Tuberville. And so I think that we need for Tuberville and much influence as they can have Trump people going in there to do a little blocking and tackling for Wall to say, you know, give him an opportunity to be in Ainsworth.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're going to have to like my advice to John Wall, and I'm going to just say it on the air here, do everything you can to make Garland Gudger look good for your first 2 years. Don't go in there. Absolutely. Don't try to be Will Ainsworth immediately. You got to win them over. You got to earn their respect. You got to show that you're an ally. You can't just come in and because there were times when Ainsworth probably got a little out of bounds with, you know, going around and getting co-sponsors on bills and things like that. But he had earned that. He had earned that okay. You know, he like I said, he kind of was in the club. They accepted him as an honorary member. They went to social events. They hung out together. It's going to take time for John Wall to get there, but he can get there.
I think he can get there too. I think that I've heard people already say, you know, okay, the Senate's going to ignore John Wall. He doesn't have those relationships. And my theory is he can build them. You know, let's not forget that Will Ainsworth defeated Twinkle Kavanaugh. He wasn't the establishment pick for that seat either. And while he coming in, there were people upset that he came in over Twinkle because they thought they knew what they were going to get from her. So I think that Walt, there's a great possibility for him to set himself up for success here.
Yeah. Well, and then we'll talk U.S. Senate real quick. I mean, Barry Moore winning probably shouldn't have been a surprise. And you and I, like I told you this week, or this time last week, Helvetia stuff will just be silly. Like, we'll be talking about it, and we'll be like, well, I can't believe we were wasting time on that. But, I mean, where I saw things going here, April Marie, is two Saturdays ago, and they were threatening lawsuits, and they were mishandling it. And I was like, look, it may be a scurrilous charge that your opponent's bringing up, but that doesn't mean you don't have to answer it. You have to answer it. You have to respond to it. And I thought that once they got that message that you can't just run away from it, because there was this fear that if they responded to it, it would create a news story, and a news story would give Jared Hudson's PAC the ability to run attack ads about it. And I was just like, well, you know what? They're going to find somebody. They're going to pay somebody to write that article. They'll have the footnote they need to get the legal clearance. Where they're not, where you've got to do is it's just part of winning a U.S. Senate race. You're going to have to respond to it and take it seriously and not pretend that it's above you to respond to this.
I think one of the kind of master, you know, tricks of that whole situation was making it about masterful on the side of Barry Moore's people was they made it about the fact that, yes, he qualifies as a veteran. This is a stupid argument in terms of definition, but they absolutely did not take the bait on the time and the amount and the dates of discharge and all of that stuff. And so it looked like a desperate ploy. Even the things there were legitimate questions on got swept into the whole wave of this just reeks of desperation, which you called it. You knew it would.
Yeah, I mean, but that's how it always is. You see something like this, and like the problem with it, when you and I were both pitching these stories, right? It was too complicated to for the layman to understand. That the person just kind of out there, a casual observer news, maybe they listen to shows like this or whatever while they're driving, and they're smart people, but like you had to present them with a document that was like 3 or 4 pages long to really make your point, and that's just not going to that just becomes too difficult to understand.
Yes, and I think that they really, the cease and desist letters, that was a little bit of silly town, but they managed to overcome that, and that wasn't the message at the end. The message at the end was, yes, he's a veteran, and here's why we say so.
April, where are folks able to find you online? How can they do so?
Best place is xaprylmarie, and then, of course, on 1819 News.
All right, April Marie Fogel, ladies and gentlemen. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, I got my first truck when I was 3. Drove 100,000 miles on my knees. Hauled marbles and rocks and thought twice. Inside my head, before I reached 30, I'd be dead.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us, despite our little technical snafus to be expected with a inclement weather in the area and EAS test going off, or not test, but actual alerts. Going off, so be safe out there, but we'll work through this, and we'll make it work. Text line 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the program, all you do is hit me up on that text line, and they text you. You can play slot machines at the old Greyhound Park. You're not really playing like traditional slot machines, so you're not. It's so slot machines in their purest form, like you go to Vegas or wherever. They're lining up at random. Whatever the winning formula, jackpot or whatever, in theory, it's lining up at random, or it's programmed in a way to line up at random. Once you're playing slot machines on at the old Greyhound Park, they're not lining up at random. They're based on old horse races. Yeah, I know. So one of the wheels spinning will stop, and that's first place. One will stop at second place, and one will stop at third place. And they're assigned a horse. And the way that falls or way that horse race lines up, and if it lines up and you win the jackpot, then so be it. But it's not it's a game of chance and not a game of – or it's a game of skill in theory by the legal definition – and not a game of chance. That's how they're getting around this. You're not really playing slot machines. This is just a workaround. And like I said earlier, it's a workaround in bad faith. It's a loophole. They're trying to skirt the law any way they can, yet they want us to negotiate with them in good faith to legalize it, to legalize all gambling in this state. And I hear, well, we need to legalize gambling so we don't have to do these silly little loopholes. No, you need to make it illegal. These loopholes can be closed. They've been closed in other states. Why can't they be closed in Alabama? I don't know. We just need to legalize it, tax it, and regulate it. Well, I mean, you got to get there eventually. But I think these are not good faith actors. I really don't. Tropicana? No, it was Old Shell Road, talking about where in 1997 you could go and go have beer and play place bets. Yeah, I graduated high school in 1994. I can't imagine little Jeff Poor strolling up, plopping out on a bar stool and putting $50 on something, on a trifecta. You can't imagine that.
Just glitter and shine.
Mobile must have been a different place, at least on Old Shell Road. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.